Welcome to the West Virginia Soccer Association Beyond the Pitch podcast here on the West Virginia Soccer Association Digital Network. My name is Marcus Cole, Director of Soccer Operations and Branding. Now, before we begin today's show, I want to remind you that once you've had a chance to check out our program, make sure you give our podcast a 5-star rating and follow us wherever you get your podcasts. Now, this helps you stay up to date on the latest content from us. And honestly, the content is getting more intense and more valuable as the weeks go on. Some great guests have been on the program that you can check out. And also, this helps us get the word out to others to let them know that we are providing valuable information for our soccer players, coaches, referees, and parents. On the phone with us today is Rachel Hayes, Certified Strength and Conditioning Coach. Rachel, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Why don't you go ahead and start off by providing some context for our audience? Give us some background about you and your qualifications and certifications.
Sure. Well, I've been in my current role at Denton Guyer High School in Texas for about 5 years. I have my responsibilities are like strength and conditioning for all the women's athletics. So that includes women's soccer, track, men's, women's basketball, softball, volleyball, tennis. So I have quite a few athletes I work with. Before that, I spent a year out at Stanford, worked with women's basketball and synchronized swimming, which was a really interesting, unique sport. Prior to that, I did a couple of internships, one at Oklahoma State when I was in graduate school, worked with their women's soccer team there, and then 1 year at Alabama, primarily working around the softball and tennis teams there. So I've kind of been all over the place and experienced a lot of different ways to train and different methodologies and outlooks, and just trying to put that to as best use as I can here with all these teams and hopefully do these athletes a little bit of service.
I think a lot of our audience will be surprised to know. I'm not surprised because I know how a lot of the other states work, but your role at the high school is a full-time job, correct?
That's correct, yeah. When I kind of decided that I wanted to get out of the college scene a little bit, and because what college strength coaches see a lot is by the time athletes get their freshman year, they get to college, they've signed. A lot of times what happens is they begin to have, you know, these injuries or they've had injuries. And so they kind of get to college in a little bit of a broken state, if you will. And so it takes a lot of work and time and investment to get them up and running again, mostly because they've just been, you know, specializing or playing for years and years and years and have, you know, not really had a strength coach or anyone, you know, intervening on that side. So I kind of began to see that a little bit and decided I think I can hopefully make an impact at the high school level, kind of, you know, help some of these kids overcome some of those things before they get to college. And so it came down to Texas, and just happened that Denton ISD, and for those who aren't familiar, Denton is a suburb just kind of like north of Dallas. There's four high schools, and they opened a full-time position at each high school for a strength conditioning coordinator. So really, really a rarity still, unfortunately. It's getting bigger, but with the states like Texas, California, where high school sports are, you know, a really big deal, they're kind of hopefully paving the way to make strength conditioning roles full-time. So, yeah, it's interesting, but it's definitely – it's great for the field, great for the athletes.
I agree. I think it's extremely wonderful. I wish they would have that here in our state because it mm-hmm. is sorely lacking area. And like you said, I think it's extremely important for these athletes, especially the ones that are looking to go off to college, to work with a strength and conditioning coach. Now, in all fairness, my daughter has been working with a local strength and conditioning coach, been working with him for the last 6 years. And honestly, mm-hmm. I credit him and his program and everything that he's done with her that has kept her relatively injury free. I don't want to say mm-hmm. that he's kept her injury free because I mean, you know, right. there's no guarantees in this,
sure.
but I
yeah.
believe that, you know, through his program and making sure, cause I mean, she's been a constant soccer player, exclusively probably for the last 4 years. She's a high school mm-hmm. senior this year going to play D2 soccer, next year here in the state.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, working with that, I believe, you know, in enabling her to have a full range of motion as opposed to just the specific soccer related movements has
sure.
helped her be stronger, be more effective, and have that, you know, not as injury prone.
For sure. Yeah, definitely. You know, there's, like you said, there's no guarantee, you know, the terms injury prevention was kind of trendy in years past and you still see it being used. You know, you can't prevent anything from happening. But definitely the strength component kind of balances the athlete out a little bit, strengthens their connective tissue and your muscular tissue and kind of reduces the chances of injury. And especially for females, plays a huge role in that. So it's definitely an aspect that still gets overlooked a lot, but I think is making headway for sure.
And what's great about, too, a strength and conditioning coach is the fact that, you know, obviously our bodies are not symmetrical.
Mm-hmm.
There's, you know, there's where, you know, the movement may not be of an athlete, may not be where it needs to be. And then the body starts compensating for that awkward movement or whatever. And then that's where they get in the problem of having the injuries. And but strength and conditioning coach can help correct that and make the movement more effective and beneficial for the athlete.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah, it can be. I have kids that come in, soccer kids too, speaking that, you know, I'll watch them as freshmen or eighth graders and, you know, they already have some sort of shift or imbalance. And, you know, some of those are normal. You kind of have to begin to know the athlete to kind of, you know, decide whether it could be harmful or could be a problem in the future. But, yeah, most of the time we really don't want to see a lot of asymmetrical issues going on. But if you can catch those early on and you're watching body weight movements, we start out, all my kids start out in seventh and eighth grade with body weight. You know, so we're kind of trying to weed those out and find those issues before we ever start loading them with, you know, external load. But definitely really important to look ahead for those. A lot of times it can be with soccer athletes, especially it can be, you know, previous injuries. I'll ask kids sometimes, you know, have you rolled that ankle? Have you hurt that foot? And because it's kind of making you know, squat a little funny. And a lot of times it's, yeah, I broke this ankle or I've rolled this ankle a lot. And so it's just knowing that ahead of time can really help help the strength coach, help the athlete kind of understand, well, you know, this is still lingering and causing you some compensation. So we need to correct that if possible.
Now, Rachel, you recently had an article published talking about training year-round athletes, and I know we have a lot of athletes that train year-round. We just finished up our high school soccer season here just a couple of weeks mm-hmm. ago, and now we're getting ready to go into club season. We have ODP tryouts that have been going on mm-hmm. here in the state. We have a tournament recently locally, and we've got more coming up in other states that a lot of our high school athletes go to. So the transition goes right from the high school season right into club season, continuing mm-hmm. through the winter and then preparing for the spring season. Why don't you talk to mm-hmm. us a little bit about that article that you wrote?
Yeah, sure. I used the article, the premise of the article was about training year-round athletes. The picture on the title of the article is actually a volleyball athlete, and I kind of use volleyball as an example, but here in Texas, we're kind of the same situation with soccer as well, where they're training year-round. Volleyball is also another one that I kind of see a lot of those same issues. And really, the article is kind of just a culmination of the last 5 years of kind of my learning experience and what I've kind of observed. And really, the youth athletic scene, sports scene is growing, getting bigger. The specialization scene is, you know, it's really not going to change. We have a lot of voices and a lot of strength coaches, myself included, that are, you know, obviously not We're not in favor of it, but there's really nothing we can do as far as stopping the machine that is what it is. And, you know, with the growth of strength and conditioning also, and in the youth scene as well, my goal is just to emphasize through the article that, yes, you know, strength is a vital part of training, but that when you're dealing with athletes that play year-round, you know, it's something that has to be treated a little bit differently. Coming from the college scene, you know, or if you're a college strength coach, or if you're a parent and you're, you know, you're asking a college strength coach, or you're trying to, you know, utilize those resources, that's great. But when you're dealing with an athlete who's playing year-round, playing for a club, doing maybe other workouts, you have to be really cognizant of what you're doing with them. So really, I just kind of wanted to voice kind of open a window, if you will, into what some of these athletes are going through on a weekly basis, year round, week after week, and how we kind of go about, you know, emphasizing that strength component and getting in the weight room, but also kind of tailoring it to athletes who play year round.
Now, you had 4 points in the article that you focused on. Can you go over each one in detail for us?
Sure, yeah. The first point that I made was about undoing. Volleyball was the example I used in the article, but really, like I said, it can relate to any sport. So, you know, college athletes, professional athletes, they all have an off season. They have a more of a time where they kind of get to reset. They aren't, you know, the overuse and repetitive movements for soccer players. They're on their feet. They're doubled, so to speak, because they're really not getting an off-season time to reset or rest. So when it comes to soccer, you know, talking about undoing the sport, what I mean by that is we have to, you know, around the clock, kind of address things, overuse or prevent, try to reduce. Overuse injuries or issues that arise from just continuous overuse. So like for soccer players, you know, with my kids, we're trying to take care of the lower leg a lot, the ankles and the feet. They're the primary movers for soccer players. So, you know, we're trying to make sure that their ankles are staying strong and mobile year round. We're trying to address the calves, you know, foam rolling them or stretching them a lot just to try to keep, you know, everything healthy down there, addressing the hips. We do a lot of band work, hip mobility. And, you know, these are pieces that you might find also in a college program, but maybe not in as high a volume as you would with like a kid who plays year round, just because they really aren't getting, they can't really take a break from it. You can't really leave the program, if you will. It kind of has to stay there. So when I say I'm undoing the sport, it just means I'm kind of, you know, really undoing the chronic wear and tear of what they undergo.
Right.
So the next point, I talked about individualizing workouts. And this can kind of be received, depending on who you're talking to, can kind of be received with mixed responses, because in a team setting, you know, it's important that it's a strong culture. You know, everyone has the same space at the table. But when it comes to workouts, not everything is, really controlled from day to day. I had my soccer team in yesterday to lift, and, you know, I'm asking, like, how many kids played this weekend? Well, not all of them played, but some of them had, you know, 3 games over the weekend, which is just an incredible amount of work on their body and taxing. So in some cases, you know, I have to individualize. I have to, you know, take this one athlete, or I have to take this group of 3 or 4 athletes, just depending, and really kind of break down the workout and, you know, give them alternatives just to kind of give them a break and, you know, let them kind of get a little recovery on that day rather than, you know, doing the planned workout, so to speak. So at that point, I'm really just suggesting that it's reasonable to tweak a workout based on that, on the feedback that athlete gives you, which, you know, you're not going to know unless you're communicating and listening to what they're telling you. Third point, I talked about training strength consistently. And for soccer players, That's just, it's vital. Soccer is a very physical sport. You're having body contact, and you know, in some sports that's not allowed, but in soccer it's a physical game. You've got the ball rolling around, you're changing direction. It's hot, it's cold. There's a lot of factors that go into making it a really intense game. And I think that strength plays a really crucial role in keeping those athletes strong and healthy, especially for females. You know, there's tons and tons of studies talking about the risk that female soccer players, female athletes have compared to male athletes as far as ACL injuries go or any other type of injury. But that's not to say that it's not, you know, it's not important for males and females. But definitely for soccer players, keeping consistent strength training year round if possible. And by consistent, you know, it doesn't mean you have to be in the weight room all the time. It doesn't have to mean that you're in there 3 days a week or 4 days a week like some teams might be. 7 out of 8 of my teams, they only lift twice per week, but we do that year round. They even come in on the summertime, you know, twice a week, and they get in just to kind of keep some strength training in their system. In season, we might only get in once a week, and that's, you know, that's perfectly fine. My soccer team, my girls' soccer team, in fact, they lift on Wednesdays, and then Saturdays they're completely off, which is great. They have Saturday and Sunday to recover. But just that one day of keeping that strength work in there, I think really pays off. Helps us, you know, stay fresh, and I modify that as needed, but it's consistent for sure. We get in there and get some work done. Last point, I talked about less being more, and that can be taken in a lot of different ways. There's a lot of examples I can use through that. I think the point I made in the article is that, you know, sometimes we, as strength coaches or coaches, you know, we can get on social media and we see so-and-so doing this exercise or doing this workout. But we have to remember that if you're working with youth athletes that play year-round, they're not in the same state that, you know, that person on social media might be. So we sometimes need to, you know, have a good idea of what's going into them and realize that it's really not about the workout or the exercise. Yes, they do need to get in the weight room, but it doesn't have to look the same as something you see on social media. So, you know, I teach like the hang clean. We might do that sometimes, but really, I do a lot of work with dumbbells. We do a lot of explosive work with dumbbells just because they can use, you know, both arms, they can use both legs involved in a split stance or a regular stance, and they're getting a lot of the same benefits of it. Explosive movement, stabilization, deceleration, but they're not, it's just not as heavy. It's not as taxing on their system. So just making changes like that, small changes, where they're still getting something out of it. It's still consistent, but it's just a little, you're putting in less to get out more. And I think that pays off, and knowing when to do that. Soccer, for a soccer specific example, you know, max speed work is really, really beneficial for soccer players. And in the college setting, there's a lot of coaches leading the way and talking about max speed development and training it. But with my kids, it's not necessarily something that we can just come out and do on a scheduled basis. It's highly, highly taxing to the system. And it's not something we could do consistently just based on, you know, their travel and club schedules. And maybe I have that, you know, maybe I have something scheduled like that on a Monday, but they come in and they've played 3 games that weekend. It's not a safe thing to implement at that time. I'm you know, potentially increasing their risk for injury that day, or, you know, maybe they have practice on Tuesday. And, you know, it's just one of those things that, yes, it could benefit them, but not at the expense of their health, so to speak. That's the thing that has to drive, you know, every decision that you make as a coach is this healthy? Is this good for that athlete?
And you bring up a very good point, and I think that's where the communication comes in with the athlete and the strength and conditioning coach, is being honest with your, you know, and letting the coach know exactly what's going on with you and what you're feeling, what you're experiencing, what your workload was from a soccer aspect. Because I know that there's some coaches that have this philosophy, and I don't agree with it, that during the season, there's no room for strength and conditioning because you need to focus on the soccer and the skill and playing games. And here in West Virginia, unfortunately, at the high school level, you know, sometimes, you know, I know my daughter had, I think, 5 weeks of three matches in a week on Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday. And then there was some training in between. And, you know, there's no strength and conditioning. And it's important to be able to do that, but you've got to be able to communicate with your strength and conditioning coach. Because like you brought up, not everybody on the team is getting the same minutes as the other players. You know, you got my daughter, you know, averaged 70 to 75 minutes of an 80 minute match and stuff. So where there's somebody else who's averaging, you know, 20 to 30 minutes and stuff, they can have, you know, more of a load put on them during the off days when they're not playing and that kind of thing. So I think you bring up a very good point of the communication level between them.
Yeah, it's definitely important. And you know, if you're working with high school kids, you know, they're not, as I found, they're not always just forthcoming with everything that's going on. Sometimes you have to get them down and really ask, or, you know, I can tell you have a set of coaches' eyes, like you can watch and you know, by watching the athlete move or you watch their body language, like you can tell, but that's one of those things that as a strength coach, you're really going to have to be vested in and pay a lot of attention to detail and knowing your kids. Because there are signs that things might not be, you know, top notch that day. You kind of have to be aware. And, if it's a kid that's not going to, you know, voice that, that's when you just watch them and let your eyes tell you what's going on. And, but yeah, if you're a kid, it's also important. And I have a couple of kids like that myself, that play high level club, and I've really got to get them down and talk to them on a daily basis and say, hey, you know, what's going on? Is this, you know, is this bothering you today? Well, if so, then, you know, it's fine. We'll modify. It's not worth being hurt.
Yep, I agree. Now, you're active on social media, specifically on Twitter. You had a real interesting tweet not too long ago that kind of opened my eyes a little bit and didn't really discover, you know, I didn't really think about it and did a little bit of research on it and found it extremely interesting. It was about hydration in the colder months as we head into our winter season here in West Virginia. Why don't you talk to us a little bit about that tweet and the thoughts behind it?
Sure. Yeah, it's something that I try to remind my athletes about, you know, as the winter and the drier months kind of descend upon us. And mostly what reminds me to think about it is when I'm, you know, in the morning, you know, the heat's on in my apartment and I wake up and my mouth feels dry and I'm like, geez, you know, I'm dehydrated. I wake up dehydrated. Well, the heat's been on. So, you know, the air in your house, the air in your apartment, wherever you live, you've got the heat on. It's drier already outside. It's drier in your house. So just, you know, sleeping or sitting around watching TV during the day, it's almost like you're turning into a raisin. It just, you know, dries you out and you don't realize it because you don't have the same indicators as you do in the summertime. You know, in the summer you go outside and you're sweating immediately or the air is humid. And so, you know, you can see and feel yourself dehydrating and it's hot. So you're a little bit more naturally inclined to want to drink liquids. But in the winter, it's not as obvious. And especially if you're an outdoor athlete and, you know, it's windy, it's dry outside, you may not even realize that you're sweating because it evaporates so quickly. And it's almost like you can dehydrate a little faster. It can be a little bit more of a dangerous situation because before you know it, you're really thirsty or you're getting cramps or, you know, you're just not feeling right. And it's because you've dehydrated. So, I really try to be on my athletes. To me, hydration is one of the easiest things, athletes can do. You know, you just carry a bottle around with some water, a little bit of Gatorade, something throughout the day. And in the cold months, it's just one of those things that gets overlooked. And so I'm really trying to, I try to be on them, remind them that, you know, it's just as important, if not more important to stay on that during the winter months.
And with it being so cold, it's hard to drink cold water.
Exactly.
I found it easier, actually, believe it or not. I drink room temperature water. That seems during the winter months, it's a lot easier to do that. And I find myself, I'm no way an athlete of any sort, but, you know, drinking room temperature water seems to help during the winter months, and it makes it a lot easier than trying to drink, you know, cold water.
For sure. Yeah. It's kind of like I was saying, like in the summer, you want something cold, you know, whatever it is, you kind of, it sounds good at the time, but like you said, in the winter, it's just not appealing whatsoever. But I found myself preferring at room temperature water as well in the winter. It's just easier to take in. But yeah, it's important. So, yeah, thanks for bringing that up.
And, you know, it's one of those things that I promote on this show a lot and talk to everybody about. It's controlling the controllables. Hydration is controlling the controllables. If you want to have, you know, an advantage on your competition, hydrate. Mm-hmm. You know, it's so overlooked.
It's a very easy one to overlook. And I think a lot of athletes, as they get older, they realize that with high school kids and younger kids, middle school kids, they just, you know, it's important to talk about it and mention it as much as you can, just so that they're aware. It's something that they have an awareness of. But yep, definitely it's a controllable, an easily controllable thing that plays a huge role in performance and health and injury reduction. You know, hydration can definitely play a role in all those things.
Now, Rachel, before we wrap things up here, now that we're into the winter months and we're back to standard time, we're here in West Virginia, actually got our first touch of snow on the ground, and it gets dark early and that kind of thing. It can sort of be somewhat of a depressing time of year, just especially from an athletic standpoint. Can you give us any tips that you use with your athletes to keep them motivated this winter season when it comes to training?
Yeah, it's you know, sometimes I find with athletes, they if it's a game or if it's something that's competitive, they're all for it. But when it comes to, you know, working out or lifting or, you know, having to just run, you know, do those boring training things, it's not as exciting. So what I tell my kids is, you know, over the breaks that we take, Christmas, Thanksgiving, is to get a small group together, get your friends from your team together and go to the gym and, you know, work out together. I think having, just a training partner, just the two of you, having someone who's dependent on you showing up, and being there and being present, is a good way to keep yourself accountable.
Absolutely. Accountability is huge.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. If you know someone's waiting on you, you're more likely to show up. You know, a group of your friends or your teammates are waiting on you, you're definitely more likely to show up. Otherwise, you know, you're going to hear about it later.
And they'll dog you on social media too.
Here we are in the gym
and where's Susie? Where's Susie today? Susie decided to sleep in this morning.
Exactly. And you know, everybody sees it by the time you get up and you've slept in, like, you know, everybody's seen it. So, you don't want to leave them hanging, and it's a good time to bond and, to build some camaraderie. And, the other thing I like to say is, like, you know, choose fun activities. Like I said, athletes don't necessarily just love to, you know, rise and grind all the time, because they do it already. They go to practice, they go to games, like it gets very monotonous. So, yes, it's important to have some structured training in there, some structured lifting, to get in some running from time to time. But, you know, if you're having fun, you're more likely to partake in it. If it's just a game of basketball, or, you know, getting in the pool and playing, keep away or dodgeball, something, just, you know, find fun activities to do. If you like getting on the stationary bike, you know, some gyms have, like interactive games or, competitions. I know, the Concept 2 or like the erg and the bikes and the, I think they have a ski erg now. I'm pretty sure that you can, enter your times into like a national database. So just finding things to keep yourself competitive, taking a class, you know, it doesn't have to be, it doesn't have to be so specific that, you know, you can't have a good time doing it. The off season should be a break and some of the monotony and giving your body a break, a chance to, you know, move in different ways and use different muscles. So just try to find things that are fun.
Well, Rachel, if anybody is interested in finding out more, we're going to actually have a link to the article that you did about the year-round athletes and training and things along that line.
Okay.
But if people are interested in learning more about you and some of the things that that you're doing and talking about and tweeting about, where can they find you?
My Twitter handle is rhayes2.
Okay. And we'll make sure when we post this podcast and other short snippets, our quick hits on our social media platforms, we'll make sure to tag Rachel in all of that so you can find her and give her a follow. And, you tweet a lot of interesting things and a lot of thought-provoking things. And we certainly appreciate you being on the show today, Rachel.
Well, thanks. I appreciate it. It's been an honor to talk to you, and I hope that listeners find some of that helpful.
I'm sure they will. Thank you for listening to the West Virginia Soccer Association Beyond the Pitch podcast here on the West Virginia Soccer Association Digital Network. Now that you've heard our show, make sure you give our podcast a 5-star rating and follow us wherever you get your podcasts from. Of course, make sure you follow us on social media on Facebook, WV Soccer, Twitter, at WV Soccer, on Instagram, at WV Soccer, and now we are on TikTok, believe it or not, at WV Soccer. So make sure you follow us and hear a little bit more from Rachel as the weeks go on. So thank you for listening to us today, and we'll see you next week. Take care.